constitution and standards. Just to say that the microphones aren't working, so we're going, as somebody said, natural, get your vocal cords working so I can hear. I'm a bit deaf sometimes, so just to warn you. and bear with me as I try and read through from my screen, as opposed to the usual paper that we have had before. Right, apologies for absence. Who do we have, Scott?
We've had apologies from Dr. Tim Ward. We've also had apologies, and the committee will be aware, from Mrs. Vicky Chapman. I'd highlight at this point in particular, certainly for the benefit of everyone present, that Vicky has tendered her resignation from the committee. And in terms of other apologies, I've not had anything received yet from Hugh Davis, so I can only anticipate that he's en route at this point. But other than that, I see all of the members of the committee are present.
Thank you, Scott. I think on that point, as far as Vicky Chapman's resignation is concerned, I'd just like to pass this motion that we give her our thanks and very many thanks for her previous attendance and help on this committee. So if I could propose that, could I have it seconded? Thank you very much. We could pass that on, Scott.
We shall, and we'll record that in the minutes of the committee as well, as part of the formal record.
Okay, thank you. Right, declarations of interest. I noticed that there isn't a chart with all our other interests on the board pinned to the wall. So could we have your other declarations of interest? Mine, in particular, is that I'm a district councillor for South Somerset District Council. Are there any more while we're here?
Yeah, a Sedmore District Councillor and a Bridgewater Town Councillor.
Thank you.
Chair of Llanfbadville Parish Council.
Thank you. If that's all, you have that, Scott. Thank you. Right, the minutes from our previous meeting, which hopefully you've read and can confirm that I can sign these. Do I have your agreement on that? Thank you, David. Let's go. Okay, thank you. And we go on to public question time. I've seen in numbers of the public.
And so we've received one in by the deadline, either chair.
Nothing
so there's
received.
Been nothing there formally received in advance.
Okay, then. Thank you very much. Okay, first bit of business.
Sorry. Does we do matters arising from the minutes? Or do we not? I don't know.
Not usually. Usually the item in terms of minutes is principally concerned with the accuracy in terms of the record.
Yes. So do we at some point...
There are opportunities later on in the agenda, particularly in terms of if it relates to items on the agenda, or, if not, in terms of any other items under AOB.
Okay, that's fine.
There's an opportunity there.
I love the fact that I've got AOB.
Okay. Right then, back to... back to the business. Item number 5, changes to the contract, procedure rules and standing orders. So if we can just, I need to get my little screen working here.
Thank you, Chair. Again, just for the benefit of the committee, we've got Claire Griffiths, who's the head of our commercial and procurement team. And Claire's obviously the author of the report, but obviously also available to take you through the key points and deal with any specific questions you have.
Yes, and good morning, Claire, and thank you. Welcome. Also, we have Tom Woodhams here, who's our legal advisor, just to mention that for help as we go along, if we need it. So, the committee, you've no doubt read these details, the notes, and the recommendations that you see on this changes to the rules and orders. Are there any questions, first of all, for Claire, or Claire, will you run us through it with a summary?
Happy to run you through it, Chair, if you like.
Okay, then.
Okay. So the contract procedure rules and standing orders, I'm sure all very well aware, are rules for the organisation in terms of if we're procuring anything. They were last updated in October 2017, so at the end of last year, we took an annual review to identify whether they were still relevant, accurate, and whether there was a requirement for any updates to those. We identified five areas where we think we need to make amendments, so that went to our governance board last month for their consideration. And as a result of that, I brought this report today to the committee to formalise the recommendations that came out of governance board. The main one that came out of it, speaking of the COP, is in terms of thresholds that we have in the contract standing orders. Last summer, because of the financial imperative that was upon Somerset County Council, some increased financial scrutiny was introduced through the 10-point plan. That's been in operation since last summer, and so there's been a disconnect in terms of our actual operating procedures in terms of, in comparison to what's in the contract standing orders. So this report seeks to rectify that and highlight that officers no longer have authority for up to £25,000 to spend. It's up to £10,000, and anything over £10,000 now needs to go to either the Director of Corporate Affairs and the Finance Director. So there's a table in section 3.7 that highlights what the thresholds were before, and then further below a table that amends those thresholds to reflect the 10-point plan. The 10-point plan is likely to be reviewed this year, but if and when that does happen, we'll then go back and look at the contract standing orders and make sure again that they reflect each other. Excuse me. And in addition to that, there's a number of smaller aspects which are in the rules which need to be amended. We've had a change of director. So previously it was former boss, can't find his title, but it's now Simon Clifford, who is the Director of Corporate Affairs, so we need to amend the rules to reflect that. GDPR came into effect last May. It was published in 2016, but the contract standing orders hadn't actually picked it up because they were put in place before they were implemented last summer, so we need to make an amendment within the rules to reflect the change to GDPR from data protection in section 31. Also in section 48, it talks about how we record and how we publish and how we're under government transparency rules, publicising all the contracts that we have. What we don't actually do at the moment is publish our grants as well. And there is a requirement under transparency legislation that we do that, so we seek to rectify that in this report. And also, there's a requirement that we go to governance board with waivers and exemption reports. We don't actually have to go to governance, or we should be going to governance with breaches, and we haven't been doing that. And as far as I can tell, breaches are probably more significant than waivers and exemptions, because waivers and exemptions are being through a formal process, there's a documentation for it. They are authorised variations from the rules, shall we say, and breaches are non-authorised variations. So it was agreed at governance boards in January that we'd also pick up breaches moving forward, and then, if necessary, take action where those have occurred. They're very, very rare, I'm happy to say. Maybe one or two a year, but unfortunately do occasionally happen, so we do need to be recording those and taking action accordingly. So that's the main changes that have been put forward today in the report for your consideration.
Thank you, Claire, thank you.
Question, may I interrupt? I think Hugh's trying to get that. He's been there for quite a long time.
Oh, let him in, shall we? Yeah. Go on. Okay, Hugh. Okay. Okay, well, let's wait for you. Yes, just move along. We'd like to have you on board, Peter.
He did close the door. He must have disappeared. Sorry.
Oh, it's only a ghost. He's given up.
He's been to the court.
He's been abducted.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, I've had the fountain pen. I've had the fountain pens.
Okay, let's continue then, ladies and gentlemen. Tessa, your question.
Okay,
please.
Well, actually, it's not really. I've got some observations before right. I have questions, if I may.
Fine.
Okay, so if I may, when I read this through, some of it didn't make. It needs a bit of tweaking to make some sense. So 3.6, this control of spending has been in place either since whenever, or for some time, but not been in place since for some time. All right. 3.7, in view of, I have no idea what, it is recommended that. So I presume we just need to take out in view of and just say it is recommended that. Or we need to explain why it's recommended that. Mm-hmm. In 3.7, the top of page 13, we've got call off written one way, call off written another way further on in report, and there's a loose EU at the end of that sentence. Where this is not observed, officers must seek approval to award call off contracts exceeding the EU
threshold.
Well, yes, I know that, but let's say that. Then, if I may, can I just ask, please, the 10-point plan was brought out in June. Why are we seeing this now? And why do we not see it? Because I know I've been to meetings since June. Why was it not brought to this committee earlier? And now we're just about to approach a balanced budget. I presume that there should be a review, you say, later on this year, in the summer or in the spring or something. It should be now, in the view of the... I mean, surely that starts after the 20th of February. Not so I'm looking at you.
No, it's
just
fine.
Because I'm looking at you.
It's my report.
I could look like that. But it's... That review has to take place, and surely we do we need a 10-point plan if we got back to a balanced budget situation? That's my question. So, and I have to say, somebody needs to read the 10-point plan before they actually publish these things, because frankly, it moves from, it's got some of its first person, some of its third person, it's got strategic leadership team, which I question, I think that's probably the senior leadership team. You know, it's got just bits and pieces all over the place, which it moves tenses relatively frequently, and some of it just doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, you've got here, it is imperative that the workforce structures in SAP match our finance reporting, therefore managers, HROD and finance will work together. They are working together, I presume. And we've got things like in point number five on this, a freeze on recruitment. This will apply to all posts. Obviously, there will be a small number of exceptions, but those are completely contradictory phrases. So the parameters for when there would be an exception has to be stated, and you can't say this will apply to all posts if there are obviously going to be a small number of exceptions. I won't worry about the rest of it. I mean, it's just most of it's sort of, I think. And I realise that's not your document.
No,
it's
fine.
Somebody up on the whatever floor it is who probably needs to just get someone else to read it before they publish it, because this is a document purporting to come from the chief executive. It's not what we would expect, I suspect. It's not what I expect.
Okay, Tessa. I think that obviously grammatical tweaking needs to be carried out by the sound of it. And with these corrections, possibly, and alterations, is it possible to bring that forward fairly rapidly? Do you think, Scott, or what's our position on that?
Well, you'll see from the recommendations in the report, I mean, subject to your views regarding the proposed revisions, which are clearly set out throughout, we would obviously then make the technical adjustments to the CSOs themselves. So the current version of the CSOs is appended from memory in Appendix 2. Subject to the points that are made in the report, I would then grammatically edit the CSOs to ensure that they reflect that. So, I'll be honest, many of the points that Councillor Munce has raised clearly are...
Two questions in there. Why didn't we see it before? Why are we seeing it now at the end of the period to which it applies, because we're just about to set a balanced budget? So why was this not brought to this committee immediately after June? I'm pretty certain I came to a meeting in July. So why is that the case? And secondly, that review should take, if there is a review, it should take place, it should be taking place now in the light of the fact the council expects to set a balanced budget in 2 weeks' time, or less than 2 weeks' time. Mm-hmm. Those are my questions.
Okay, point taken. I dare say it's due process that this 10-point plan has been produced.
And I'm not, Chair, I'm not disagreeing with the fact there's a 10-point plan. What I'm saying is, why did this committee not see it since it's, you know, it should have been brought forward, surely,
Okay, would that have been possible to bring it forward?
Or am I wrong? I might be wrong.
I mean, again, just to be honest, from a constitutional perspective, the principal changes or principal impact are really on the CSOs. Which is why it's obviously coming through to this meeting. As to the question, could the CSO's report have been brought to the October meeting? I suspect in hindsight, we could have, collectively. That's probably an oversight that we could probably try and address and make sure we don't do in terms of the future. But I think for us, there's the fundamental one for me, still your second question, which is the review. Clearly in October, and the position of the council in terms of its financial position, we would not be able to have answered that second question at that point, which is partly why it's coming through at this point in time as part of a sequence of reviews of key parts of the constitution. So there's a reason why in that sense, and also in the sense of the fact that it's part of an annual review process. So I know Claire made reference to the previous review that was undertaken at the end of 2017, as the committee will recall. This has really then just been brought forward to the what's seen as the earliest available meeting, which is this. But I know, I mean, I won't speak for Claire, but certainly we're listening to all the points made, certainly on the points around the grammar and that. We'll certainly make sure all those are corrected. Well, what I can't do, again, just for clarity, in terms of appendix one of the 10-point plan, I know the points are made, but it's written. I can't edit that.
So there's a future thing.
There's a future learning.
Actually, I presume there's a bin thing as well, because we're moving into a new phase.
Okay, Martin.
Just an observation, Mr. Chairman. What some of the grammatical issues that have been raised, is it because this has been some of the reports have been cut and paste from previous reports? Because it does look like that a little bit. If you take some things out of one report and put them into another, then tenses get muddled and...
Can I respond to it? I'm really sorry, Chair, because it's a real bugbear of mine, and I don't like it, sending a report, and I suppose I'm slightly embarrassed that that's the case today. I had a governance meeting, and then I went on holiday, and I wrote this, and I didn't have time to actually then review it and check it because of time scales, so I do apologise. Not a good enough excuse, but I literally had like a day to do it, and then I went on leave, and so it's not probably the standard I expect it to be.
It's not actually meant to be a criticism. It's an observation that sometimes when reports are put together like this, that important detail can get overlooked or left out or put in from previous reports. That's simply that. Mm. It's all about proofreading. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. I think that we recognise those comments, and if we can amend as necessary, that would be the way forward. Any other questions? By the way, good morning to you and welcome.
Yeah. Sorry, Chair, I was late, but I was sitting patiently in the library, as I thought that's where we were.
Yes, it's an easy one.
And I've got a dodgy leg, and there is no way I could get over it. I was evil. Can you tell me where we are on our...
It's a good exercise for you, but it wasn't raining. Yes, we've gone through the usual points of declarations of interest. Do you have any other declarations of interest to you? Because we don't have the chart up at the moment.
Well, no, I'm just a naughty councillor, as everybody knows.
Okay. This is being recorded, so as long as you know that.
Particularly in reference to standards.
but we just were on the first item of main business, which you've come and talked me through. So you'll be able to catch up. Okay. So we go on to the recommendations that this committee agree, and I will take it in block of A to E. Are we voting on this?
Yes, Chair, it's either for decision.
Scott, okay. So could we have your agreement that we understand and accept these recommendations on 2.1 A to E inclusive? Could I have your show of hands, please?
Chair, if you mind, I will vote because I wasn't here.
You want to have the floor meeting?
That's sensible.
Okay. Okay, thank you. That's passed. And Scott?
It is, Chair.
Thank you.
And then in terms of 2.2 and 2.3?
It will be proofread in
Yes.
With those amendments, necessary amendments, quite right. On to 2.2, right, give our delegated authority to the monitoring officer to make any changes necessary to the contract procedure rules and standing orders as a result of the recommended amendments that are outlined in this report. So could I have your show of hands on that, that we agree that, please? And finally, on 2.3, to formally adopt the amended rules into the Constitution. And again, your show of hands for that one, please. Thank you very much. Good. Right.
Thank you, Chris.
Scott, regarding the resolution on the EU matters, should that come up?
They choose to rise it.
Okay.
Should we move on?
Moving on then. Right, so we move on to item number 6. Just wait a moment. right. I'm getting slow here. Give me paper.
Which is the financial regulations,
yes,
Chair. I know we've
yes.
got Peter Lewis here to offer CS.
Yes, we have.
Let
me just get it right. Right, item number 6, changes to financial regulations. Good morning, Peter, and welcome to this committee. Let me just get it on my screen. Okay, so the annual review for these regulations. Martin Gerrish has now left us, I believe, hasn't he?
That's right. Well, technically he's on leave, but
yes.
He just about finishes around about now as his, as his final contract end date. But yes, he's
okay, fine.
He departed the building at the end of January.
Good, but that was it. A very good job he did as well.
He did.
But just on that point of placements, just to say that I understand from Scott here that you will be responsible for this on this committee terms until the 1st of March.
Yes.
Following that, our new financial interim director, Sheila Collins, will take over from that date. Is that correct?
Is a proposal to council on the 20th of February. So there's a recommendation coming forward in respect of the 151 officer appointment.
Okay.
But until council consider that, clearly Peter still remains the council's 151 officer.
Exactly. Just to clarify that point then. And we look at the recommendations. Peter, if you could run us through this with a brief resume.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
There's a summary report attached, and as you say, quite rightly, Chairman, Martin Gerrish has left the organisation now, and a long and loyal workman for the council and looked after these things. And so there's a reference in here to changing the Deputy 151 officer. We did, until the point of his departure, have two deputies. We will now have only one deputy, and the amendment to Article 25 makes it clear where that deputy role sits. That was a post that was formally agreed by the council a little while ago when Lizzie Watkin was appointed to that role. Mm. So that's one of the changes in here. But as you say, the responsibility for these lies with the Chief Finance Officer. That's again one of the changes to try and harmonise the language through the document, so we use Chief Finance Officer. That's because the law where we call Section 151 Officer refers to that post as being the Chief Finance Officer. Mm-hmm. So trying to standardise on the terminology.
Yeah,
so
good idea.
Because it is possible, and it's quite likely, I think, that the council will change the role. In fact, the appointment process for the permanent post that was going to hold the 151 responsibility was called Director of Corporate Resources. So calling it Chief Finance Officer just makes it a bit more timeless. Whoever holds that role, holds that mantle, this relates to these regulations. So we're trying to do that through
Good.
This report as well, so you don't end up having lots of changes just because the titles have changed of these roles.
Yeah, but it's confusing for us, let alone the public.
Exactly.
That would
so
help.
Keep it stable. Whoever holds that mantle, that's who it's referring to. A couple of other things I point out. One of the things we're trying to do is to make clearer the role of scrutiny through some of the processes. One of the things I became very aware of quite early on in my tenure was the risk of overlooking the role, the very important role of scrutiny in the development of budget proposals. So we make efforts during the development of the capital programme and the revenue programme to make sure the scrutiny is properly engaged through this and try to pull in terms of financial regulations as well to make that clear about the role of scrutiny for both of those aspects, capital and revenue. The other thing I'd probably just, final thing I'd want to just point out of here is the section at D13 to 15 around training units. Being aware that we have some training units, I think it's very important that they are contributing to the council's finances. So what that section of the report now says is if there's a positive contribution from those functions, then that's great, they continue to contribute. If they go into deficit and are not contributing, therefore, if there's more than 1 year, there will be a review of the business case to identify whether or not that training unit stacks up and whether there is a prospect of recovery. So that's now built into the, assuming you agree, it's built into the financial regulations. So those are the points I wanted to highlight, Chair.
Right, thank you very much. Okay. Any thoughts, questions? Robin, sorry.
Two questions. First of all, we had, when it came before committee before, in terms of the Section 151 officer, there was this issue raised about council making expenditure on contractors rather than appointing permanent staff, and I don't know whether they're going out. It wasn't clear from your explanation whether they're advertising for a permanent member of staff or they're advertising for another contractor, and whether you could perhaps take us through that process.
Sure.
And the other thing you just talked about, where you've got a sort of expenditure unit that's falling into deficit, and if it goes on for a year, you review it to look whether you extinguish it. I'm just wondering whether a year is quite a long time. You know, I mean, it's something that, you know, I think in the commercial world, if you're making a loss for a year, then, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. You probably would have been extinguished a lot earlier than that.
Possibly, yes. So I'll deal with them in that order. So indeed, before I started in post, the council had sought a recruitment of a director of resources. Unfortunately, that recruitment was concluded around about September time. Didn't produce the candidates that the members wanted, so my contract was extended a little bit to see us through the budget process. The process was started again to recruit permanently, and once again, partly because there were a lot of other authorities recruiting for directors of finance, six that we could name at that particular time, Somerset wasn't able to attract the right level of candidate. I didn't see the shortlist, so I'm only reacting to the feedback that the members wanted. So in the process, I had recruited an individual to work with me on developing the budget on 3 days a week, who's an experienced Section 151 officer, so was working with me at below a normal level, if you like. So the council then reviewed, well, what will be different if we just go back round the loop again and try and recruit again? What will be different? Not an awful lot. So let's be sensible, let's take a year. Let's get the authority back on stable footing, make sure the reputation of the council is seen as it should be, as robust and resilient, and go out for recruitment in September. So it's a perfectly, and also the organisation is seeking to change, and seeking to change its method of operation, and therefore the requirements of the role may change as well. So all of that put together says, well, let's keep flexible, have an interim for another year, start the recruitment process around about September, and then the authority is in a much better place in order to recruit the right quality of permanent individual that they want. So that's the rationale for it. And as for a year, a good argument, yes, it's possible that you could say, well, as soon as it makes a loss, it should be axed. I think there are some, bearing in mind it's part of a bigger organisation, it's not going to actually not be able to pay its bills, any trading organisation we have, so it's not going to go insolvent, and neither would we want something associated with the council to be seen to not pay its bills, very bad for our reputation. And therefore, a year gives us a chance for some recovery to happen. At the moment, my perception is there isn't a mechanism to even do that after a year. Things can go on longer than a year, So bringing it to a year actually is shortening the horizon from the current horizon,
right,
which
okay.
is almost indeterminate.
Yeah. So just to clarify, the current, so the person who's starting is a permanent post?
No, it's another interim, so following on from me will be as a recruitment that starts, post starts on the 1st of March after my departure and continues until 31st of March 2020. And during that, the last 6 months of that, there will be the permanent recruitment will be undertaken in order to try and secure the right person for the role going forward.
I mean, you know, obviously, from our point of view, as you know, we are members of public corps into this committee, and you know, I suppose our primary purpose is to sort of represent the views of the general public, if you like. So, I mean, has anybody done any analysis as to how much money, extra or less or the same, has been spent on contractors that could usefully have been spent on an enhanced package for a permanent member of staff?
In terms of across the council, I don't think I've seen anything that says globally this is what's been spent extra on agency, because we use agency staff in lots of different places. So social workers is a very common area.
No, but I mean specifically with the finance, because it's such a, you know, part of the sort of corporate structure of the authority sort of thing.
Yes, we know how we can. So we take a permanent post at the end, add all the contributions on pensions and all of those things, then turn it into an approximate day rate, and then we can see that there is a small margin between an interim and a permanent post. So we know that. The benefit we're getting is flexibility, and the candidate who is willing, able, and very skilled and experienced to be able to step into the role on the 1st of March and undertake that role going forward. The compromise would be that the authority would push for the sake of saving a few pounds, and I'm not deriding that at all, to a candidate that might not have served the council well. I appreciate I'm kind of three steps removed from all of that process.
Yeah.
Talking about what I know has happened.
Yeah. But I mean, has consideration been given to enhancing the package for permanent member of staff by taking into account the amount of extra money that was spent on the contractor? You know, that seems perfectly sensible thing to do.
And absolutely appreciating from a commercial world, that would be a perfectly rational thing to do. Unfortunately, within local government, we are very much constrained by things like equal pay, where there are unions looking at us very carefully to see where we are evaluating jobs incorrectly. So our jobs go through a job evaluation process, the pay scales for those are assessed, and there is a careful ladder. So you have a chief executive at one level, directors at another, then strategic managers and so on, and the structure is fairly inflexible for the reasons of making sure that we're treating people fairly through their pay package. So if we actually put another £20,000 on that pay package, it would disrupt that system and leave us open to challenge, and that's part of the constraints we work in the local government.
But I mean, local government, I've worked in local government for years, I mean, the way that local government gets around that is by offering relocation expenses, additional benefits that aren't part of the salary itself. And obviously, if you're finding it difficult to recruit somebody in Somerset, then if you want to take somebody from North England, then it seems utterly sensible to offer them relocation expenses, you know, schooling allowance for the children, etc. You know,
I don't know about schooling allowance, but certainly relocation expenses would be part of the norm. Government offers those within a regime.
Yeah.
Yes, we're talking really about this financial regulations as opposed to appointments.
But interesting
questions, nevertheless. But that's the direction of this agenda item, I think. Thank you for those questions.
Thank you for the reply.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. I read these papers, and as I'm dyspraxic, I do struggle with facts and figures. I managed to get my way through them. But one thing that struck me about these papers, you have 8 members of this council, of 50 odd, that's controlling this. I think we should have a finance committee, because I'm not happy with the cabinet in charge of all that money, and I don't have no say in it, only to put my hand up every full council. I'm not happy with that.
Right. Well,
there's nothing I can do about it. I just want to register the fact that I am ill at ease. The 8 members of this council, what was it, 55
members.
55 members, so that's 47 members, have no say whatsoever in these matters, just 8 members of the council.
Well, that's the way the constitution is written,
I'm afraid. I've always measured my ease out of it.
Yeah, fine.
And again, just for everyone's benefit, again, I mean, the constitution says that because the council adopted what is called the leader and cabinet model of governance, which relates back again to Local Government Act 2000.
Like I said, there's nothing I can do about it. I just want to register my illies.
Yeah. Come in there. I think it was very important what you said about issues going through scrutiny. I think in my experience, certain things have bypassed scrutiny. And picked up after the event, after decisions were made, and it leaves us as councillors, I know officers and councillors, in a very, very difficult position sometimes, and you have to backtrack and recommend changes to that. So I think, you know, coming in for what you were just saying then about the accountability issue, I think if we can't change the constitution, at least we can ensure that things go through scrutiny properly.
That's right. Yeah, you put it as I would have put it, not want to put it.
Okay,
and of course the full budget has to be signed off by council, and I realise, you know, group dynamics and so on come to play a part in that.
Yeah.
But the budget can only be approved, and the council tax precept can only be approved by full council.
Mm.
I'm in at ease with it.
Mm. Okay, well, thanks, Dave, and points noted. any other questions on this regulations? We go back to the recommendations. They're in two parts. First of all, that we note the review of these regulations by senior finance staff, so we have noted. And secondly, to approve the financial regulations as attached, which would need a show of hands for those approvals. Can we have a show of hands for the approval, please?
Reluctantly.
Yeah.
It's unanimous, Chair.
Unanimous. Thank you very much. Okay.
Thank you, Peter.
Thanks.
Thank you very much indeed. Okay.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Right, we've... let me just... ASEAN. I'm getting off this... what's it titled?
I know you were keen, Chair, to bring forward that item.
It was the title. Okay, fine. As far as our forward growth programme is concerned, we've been, as you've seen, the recent contact from Scott regarding the local government ethical standards review, for government review, which is very bulky, but I haven't read it fully in detail, Scott.
Yeah, I was going to, and again, with your agreement, Chair, and obviously with the rest of the committee, I'd incorrectly, and apologies for this, scheduled this item after the forward work programme, and clearly it would be pertinent, and I spoke to the Chair just before the meeting, for us to discuss, because I know there was quite a lot of interest in when we held this before, and we've talked about the previous drafts that the government, that the Committee on Standards and Public Life have previously reported, together with the government's response to the previous version. Including there was a marker that was laid down by the committee about its interest in seeing the final version when it came forward. The unfortunate part being, not that they're aware of Somerset County Council's Constitution and Standard Committee, but they published the report after we'd published the agenda and papers for this meeting, clearly. So what I've sought to do is obviously add this as a supplemental item, because I know of your interest in this, primarily to seek initial views, discussion by the committee on this, and more purposefully, the reason why I'm clearly saying this is for us to do that before we talk about the forward work programme, because you may, you may determine that you'd like to explore this further in a future meeting. So on that basis, it's probably pertinent for us to deal with this discussion on this item at this point before we go into the forward work programme.
Thank you very much, Scott. As Scott says, we discussed it before the meeting. We've got a fairly full agenda for the 3rd of May, and my view is that I would always like to include it in that meeting if possible, and make a full morning of it, to make it cost effective, as it were. Scott was suggesting a separate special meeting for the benefit of debating this set of recommendations. It's not a direct policy direction. So that was really the debate. I was probably in favour of trying to bring it into the May meeting. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are that it does deserve debate. And it'll take longer than tacking it on the end of the 3rd of May meeting. I mean, I'll have something to say about that. I'm sure I'm going to drive you wild if you're still here at tea time.
Yes.
Well, I am. And I might as well say that.
There's something
now
to look forward to.
But, you know.
Okay, Tessa.
I mean, or we, you know, let's. I don't mind doing it on the same day. Maybe we break for lunch and come back again afterwards, or something. I'm not saying we have to all spend our mileage all over again.
Okay.
I'm just saying it definitely needs time. It definitely needs that attention.
Good. Thank you for that comment. Any other comments, please, committee? What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with Tessa.
It's a huge document. Sorry.
It's a huge document
to consider again, and I think it needs more time at home probably to look at it thoroughly.
Probably.
I certainly haven't been able to read it.
Okay. Any other thoughts, comments?
Well, we ought to see what the poor victims of this committee.
Yes.
Because you have other lives as well.
Oh.
I mean, I know we do, but, you know.
I'm sure the document requires good scrutiny, I think, and a thorough debate from everyone here. And that agenda is very full. It's up to you, isn't it, whether you call a second meeting or make it a full day. I personally just try to get to whichever you decide upon.
Okay.
It has to be done.
Yeah, I'm happy with a full day if you want to. Yeah.
Robin, okay, so a separate meeting is what we're saying. I would prefer not to make it a full day. And I think the general consensus here, apart from mine, is that we should have a separate meeting, special meeting for this particular item to debate it. So, Scott, can we organise that?
If that's what the committee are minded to do. I suppose for me there are some choices here, again to be blunt. One is around clearly, you know, for me this is a really important report. It's a welcome report in terms of I would anticipate that certainly councils across England and Wales will be starting to review this, not least to which the Local Government Association. I'm sure you'd be interested to see some of the views from those pieces of work. In terms of a time scale for that to be done, as in for the committee to debate, deliberate, consider what would that mean for Somerset? Is there something that you would be minded to do in terms of our code of conduct? You'll see in terms of your work programme that you're down to receive the annual review of the members' code of conduct at your June meeting. So, I mean, I'd suggest in part you actually have two choices. Well, to be fair, you have three. You could have a longer meeting on the 3rd of May to consider this and how it may inform the members' code of conduct. You could hold a special meeting between the 3rd of May and the 21st of June just to consider this and to inform the members' code of conduct. Or you could consider this at the meeting on the 21st of June and we move the members' code of conduct item back one cycle. Take account of that.
Okay, options. David.
I agree with you, Chairman. I sit on two committees in Sagemoor. It lasts from 9 o'clock in the morning till 6 o'clock in the evening, and come the middle of the afternoon. You just wish also hurry up and get on with it.
Yeah.
I think if you have one in the morning, everybody's nice and fresh, and we can give it a real good going over.
Well, that's my feeling as well. It's just a matter of when, really. So I think from following your comments, Scott, what we've got on the agenda in May, it sounds to me that you're recommending possibly we have between the 3rd of May and the 21st of June.
Is one of the options, Chair, yeah?
Yes.
You could consider?
Well, I think that's what we should look at, then.
Before the 25th of June?
Yes.
But I'm away for 3 weeks after that.
The 25th?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, can we organise that though?
We can, if that's what the committee would prefer out of those three options.
Well, that's just my opinion. Sure.
Yes,
Chairman, well, it's a matter of personal commitment, really. I think that's the problem. We could choose a meeting date. There's every chance somebody won't be there for such an important meeting. I'm personally minded to prefer the 21st of June and move the other business on because it's now it's in the calendar.
Yeah.
I know where I am on that day. Well,
What's the impact of leaving the annual review onwards?
Can you read the members' code of conduct? That would move on to, in this cycle, the 11th of October.
I'm sorry, I must take back everything I just said, because I've just looked at my diary and I'm not available on the 21st of June. I do beg your pardon.
Not that it helps, but from memory, I'm sure that's the longest day as well, isn't it?
It is. It's solstice.
Oh, come on, you mean winter's setting in.
I think we should bring another one for, but between the 3rd of May and the 21st of June, that's my feeling, a morning meeting to slot in and discuss this paper.
It's election time, local elections.
No, the
second of May.
This will be after the elections.
Oh, yes. Sorry. Well, of course
Yeah, 2nd of May. Yes. Okay, can we organise that then, Scott, please?
We can.
Yeah, I think that's general consensus.
Just looking in the diary, Chairman, Friday the 31st of May looks as
if
another meeting. Mm-hmm.
Sure, not used to bake or something.
That's a half term, that's a Whitsun week, isn't it? I can't remember.
Thursday the 23rd of May, I've got.
That would clash with another meeting.
So what were you suggesting? No?
Oh, Friday the 31st.
So I just be being, I'm deaf, that's all to tell you.
I have problems with Thursdays at the moment.
Yeah, we're not doing Thursday, it's Friday.
Friday the 31st of May, Chair.
Yes, thank you.
Sound good?
They're very good, yes, I think. 31st of May, yes.
I will have to give my apologies.
Okay,
yeah. Sorry. Friday's a
different
one. I'll be honest, Chair. I'll have to give mine.
Friday the 24th.
Because it's got to be Friday.
Okay, back Friday 24th, I can do.
Is May the 31st a clash with half term?
It is, yeah.
So the 24th would be better.
Mm.
Maybe.
May I ask a question?
24th.
I'm allowed a substitute on this committee, is that right?
We are.
Does it have to be from the extensive range of Green Party members?
Yes, it does.
I have to ask you, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Without going into detail, Friday's always difficult for me for work reasons. And if I've got it in the diary in advance, I'm okay, but I've got a lot of Fridays I can't.
How does 24th of Friday 24th?
I can't do that.
You can't do that, okay.
No, travelling.
Everybody else, can you do the Friday the 24th of May?
Yep.
Yes.
I'll ask
yes.
John.
Ask John. That would be good. Friday 24th, let's have a go at that.
And we'll sort out the library.
For 10 o'clock. Not 9 o'clock, but 9:30.
Why not here?
Well, this is better.
From memory, and it's only from memory of that, yeah. Neil will help me because Neil's far more expert in these matters, but that, I'm sure that's in the peak of our School Admission Appeal season. And this room may well be required for a School Admission Appeal.
Well, let's try for this
one. Which is why I was thinking about the library. They tend to use both rooms.
Hugh, you can park right above the library, and I think you're entitled to charge for your parking, is that right?
No.
Is that a no or a yes?
That's a no. No, you're not entitled to charge for car parking within the council.
No, the walk is fine, but the walk under pressure is not fine.
Oh, I feel.
Yeah.
What about disabled bays?
In those instances, from memory, members with blue badges, they're able to park in spaces anyway, aren't they? From memory, without charge.
I've no idea.
From memory.
Scott, can I? I've only read some of it. Have you read it all?
I wouldn't say I've read it all fastidiously, but I have. Yes, I've gone through it.
I'd be really interested to know your very, very quick summary of what your gut feeling.
I'll be honest. I wouldn't want to lead the committee in terms of my own gut feeling.
No, good point. Well said.
What I would say though is, certainly, even from looking at the recommendations, They're quite wide ranging, and there's some interesting. I can see how they've clearly garnered views and a wide variety of views in terms of those recommendations, some of which I wouldn't say clash, but nevertheless there is a fair variety. Let me switch in terms of the DPIs, which is the one that I'm particularly interested in, and also their recommendations in respect of the independent person. I'm not sure what's driving those in particular. I've not picked up any particular feedback from other local authorities in respect of having to have a fixed term or a fixed tenure for an independent person. I can understand why that may be, but I've not picked up any issues associated why you would need to do that. But as they are, and as everyone will hopefully appreciate, these are clearly a committee's recommendations on the back of the completion of a consultation exercise. This is not the government's response to those recommendations. You'll know that there's a whole series of recommendations which are therefore going forward to government for government to consider. Some of those, if government are minded to go with them, would require the government to bring forward either changes to legislation. I know from memory, principally, there are changes to existing legislation.
Right.
So, that, and again, there is, as you will all know, hopefully, there tends to be a considerable lead-in time to change in legislation, particularly at the moment.
Exactly. Well, that's it. And also, you mentioned the LGA. You got any feel for when the LGA might react, you know, publish some sort of response?
I know that other councils like us, and I know other monitoring officers, are clearly quite keenly looking at this. I mean, there is nothing stopping, and I'll be telling you this at that special meeting, regardless of the point about this is being recommended to the government to consider. What I would hope by this time is whether we have the benefit of the government's response to understand what government are minded to do. But similarly, in certain points, there, you know, local authorities can decide to do some of these recommendations, not all, because some of these relate to changes to legislation, but some of them in terms of how we operate our codes of conduct, we could look at and reflect upon as part of the annual review, regardless of the government's response, if that's something we're minded to do.
I think
all of them, to be clear, because quite a number of them require changes to legislation. As you all well know, we are a highly governed body in the form of being local government, and probably restricted, constrained, empowered far more than any other public authority.
Yes, I think this paper especially, we need to look at it and read it and see how it relates to Somerset and Somerset County Council in particular for our county. That's just the other point I'd make. Janice?
Just as per normal procedure, could I formally ask for hard copies for co-opt members, please?
Yes.
I much prefer to work on
lucky,
paper.
Lucky you.
The only thing, and my only closing note on this is... my only interesting observation is the committee went as far, not quite as far as effectively going to the point of recommending why don't we go back to the previous standards board regime. Stopped short of that. It's interesting they pick up on the points about sanctions, safeguards, giving standards some teeth, but they didn't go quite as far as, and perhaps the government should be considering repealing its previous legislation. That's
well,
my only
bit of a
final observation.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a morning meeting.
Not yet, maybe. We'll get there,
yes. That's a good pun.
Okay. Well, look, let's aim for that then, 24th. Yep. Let's hope we can do that. And see most of you then. Right.
That brings us back to the Forward Work Programme.
Forward Work Programme,
yes. Yes.
And you've all seen it, and the 3rd of May, Office of Code of Conduct, Annual Review of Whistleblowing Policy, Annual Review of Access to Information Regulations, including Somerset County Council Recording Protocol, Annual Review of Democratic Arrangements, Annual Review of Council's Constitution, and Annual Review of Committees of Terms of Reference. Well, some of those things will be pretty quickly through the agendas, like the recording elements and things like that, so that it's not quite as long as it might sound, but some will be take longer, some will take shorter time. So any comments on that May agenda, potential agenda?
Just one thing, Chair. This is funny you should mention it. This issue of recording protocol. Is the council minded to be moving forward on things like broadcasting meetings and this kind of thing, which we talked about before?
The committee has indeed, and the committee will know that certainly last year we put in place that policy amendment in terms of our audio recordings. We continue to explore, I'd say, opportunities that technology could offer us, certainly in terms of the authority, and we're certainly aware of what those solutions could be. As yet, though, we've not taken any policy decision in which to embrace those. We certainly know, and we know exactly what would be involved to employ, deploy, and resource those. But at this point, no, we're still really the only real employment we have is really in the sense of the audio recordings, in terms of the digital, and we're keeping certainly a very close watching brief. What I would say, just as a link for me in particular, is that sense of the recording protocols around principally their purposes. And you're right, some of the other models where people, other councils, use webcasting, podcasts, principally in terms of promoting democracy and transparency, for allowing others who perhaps are unable geographically to attend meetings, they've taken that policy decision to go in that step. I think, like everything, for me, it's that sense of the technology exists. I think it's much more in terms of your culture and behaviours, in terms of what are you seeking to achieve. If you're seeking to achieve a greater sense of democracy and people's involvement, then clearly that's one of the tools that allows you to do that. Obviously that's always needs to be one of the roots of the questions first around what are you really trying to do.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Right, that's the forward work programme as we have it printed at the moment. Well, some other items of urgent items of business, Tessa.
Yes, I just remember the wrong bit. Can I take you back to the
to the minutes?
Yes, minutes of the previous meeting, please. One question. I just may have missed that or not been concentrating for a moment or whatever, and I haven't checked, to be fair. But there was an issue that was raised. There was a question about officers' interests. Are those published on the website, on the County Council website? And if not, why not? Where are they published? It says they are recorded. I wasn't sure where they were recorded.
They're certainly recorded. They're held centrally.
Yes. And my question is, who holds them and who has access to them? And why are they not in the public domain? Because that sounds to me like that's a, we've got them in the bottom drawer of an office desk somewhere. Yeah, and
sorry, I didn't mean it to sound so sinister. Or there is a register of officers' interests, and there is also a register of officers' gifts and hospitality as well.
And are those on the website openly, please? Because I always have a strong view about that.
Well, that's coming up in the recommendations.
Yeah, I just want to ask the question now so I know where we are.
But are they the same as us elected members with our interests?
Well, no, we still got that.
Yes, everybody knows about this, yes.
But, so,
well, it's good, interesting, yeah.
Well, I just think it should be out there, actually.
Yeah.
Someone's trying to come in the window.
It's
all right, he's on a camera. He's
so
on a camera.
Recorded when we come in.
I'm only pausing, mainly because I'm looking on our website at the moment for the details of public registers. I'm positive. Register of officers' interests. The officers' register of interests, gifts and hospitality and other interests is not published on our website, no. But details of how people can view or request information regarding that are.
So
the council publishes as part of the Local Transparency Code the fact that we hold an officer's register, but it's not what the contents are. They are not on the website.
Okay, well, I will be pursuing that because I think it should be in the public domain. Unless you can persuade me of a reason why it shouldn't be.
Sorry, I wasn't seeking to persuade you. I was just going to say that obviously, should people wish, they can then put forward a request for information.
Yeah. It's a step too far. You know, it's quite an aggressive thing to write to the chief executive and say, I want a list of all of your officers and all, and then have to do it the following month and the following month and the following month. It's just not okay. You know, Parliament puts everything out on its website, You have to say, and if you don't say, you're in big trouble.
What, members of Parliament?
Does that include the civil service?
Yes, I believe so.
But I will check that.
I know Parliament do, because local government mirrors Parliament in terms of the elected members.
So anyway, that would be something about which I felt quite strongly. Then the other thing I was going to ask the Chair is, I know that I saw an email, I can't tell you when it was, from Wes.
Yeah.
Are you going to raise that? Or
I was expecting it, but...
I thought it was just...
Ignored. We've all seen it.
So I'd like to raise Wes's email, which says, what are we going to do if we do Brexit times ourselves on the 29th of March? Are we going to be relying on the ODU, all the procedures, all the EU record, or do we just go... And I think I know half of the answer to that, but I think we
probably do, but it's a lot of... With so many questions, what if?
But we can't rely on other people to get this all sorted out for us, so we have to sort our own... stuff out, don't we?
Yes, I agree, but I think that it shouldn't be until we actually know what's happening. Okay, we should be prepared.
Another decade.
We should be prepared for all of these things as it goes up the scale. Tom, did you want to say?
Would you like me to explain my view?
Yes, please.
I don't think you need to do anything at this stage. The government said that the procurement rules will continue substantially as they are. Even in the event of a hard Brexit, you know, no deal, we'd be subject to WTO rules. The regulations that we have at the moment would allow us to comply with those rules. And I think the government's been clear that the regulations won't change for the foreseeable future. There are things that have changed, or will change on the 29th of March or whenever it is. So the obligation to publish notices in the official journal will change, and we'll just have to publish them within the UK. We don't have to promote competition across the EU anymore after that. But apart from that, thresholds, deadlines for submission of tenders, rules on fairness, transparency, equality of opportunity, all that will remain. I think my view is you could, if you wanted, take out the references to the EU. There would be no reason not to. But the regulations and our contract standing orders, actually, because they refer to UK regulations, not to the EU regulations. On the 29th of March, 1st of April, whenever, they will continue to operate the way they do. And there isn't any need to change them.
There's just a couple of things in there that where we have to report to the European Commission. it says, I can't remember where it is now, but and also we have to refer to the Office of European Journal or something.
The official journal.
If it's going to be a hard breach, it's likely it's going to be dropped straight away.
Well, the Cabinet Office has put in place measures so that notices, I think you're talking about contract notices and contract award notices. So when a local authority begins a procurement, it has to publish a contract notice saying, this is the opportunity, please submit your...
It's the anti-competition thing or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then businesses respond to that. They think, we'll submit a tender for this one, we won't for that one. And then, in order to ensure and maintain transparency, at the end of the procedure, the local authority, having made its decision who it's going to award its contract to, has to publish another notice saying, we've come to the end of our procedure, and this is what we're proposing to do. And that's another opportunity for businesses to have a bite at the cherry and say, well, we don't think the way you did that was fair, and so we're going to challenge you. So all the rules around notices are based on this idea of fairness and transparency. What will happen on Brexit if we don't remain part of the single market, or the common market rather, or if there aren't other arrangements, we will just continue that principle, but within the boundary of the UK.
Yeah.
So there will be a UK contracts finder website that you can publish, you will have to publish the notices on, and then UK companies can access the opportunities that way.
There's also parts though where you're trying to obtain European funding for certain contracts, I believe I read in there. So if you've got, you're saying in the rules that you can't do this because of the European funding or something like that, surely it needs looking at, that's all I'm saying.
Well, certainly if there is stuff in there about obtaining funding, we're talking about the contract standing orders, aren't we? Then that is something we would need to look at, and I'm not sure I know off the top of my head which part of the rules you're talking about there.
Mm.
It's something I can take away and look at.
Yeah, I'll have a look and find it in here.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Be interesting. See what happens. Tessa?
Yes, there's one thing that I can see would presents itself as a potential opportunity, and that is the need, and I recognise this is detail and there may be other aspects to this, but I'm quite keen to get a bit of an idea on this. The requirement that the highways team particularly should publish in the back of our local newspaper, which now has a circulation of and is not the vehicle that people would necessarily use for their news. Their requirement to publish, you know, X number of notices saying we're going to do this or whatever. And I know they now publish sort of 2-year notices to allow them to do works on the highway at any point within the next 2 years, so that they don't have to do it in a timely fashion. They just need to do it before they think they're going to do it.
Yeah.
Which makes it kind of pointless, actually, because it's no information for local people.
Yeah.
I'm rather hoping that that is something that could be reviewed and dismissed, because if there is another way of communicating with people, and frankly, one should be able to go onto the Somerset County Council website if that's the sort of person you are, or we should have notices on parish notice boards. I do recognise that Taunton does not have a parish. I'm sure it's got notice boards for whatever vehicle it has for its local democracy. But there should be a way of amending this process, because it's fantastically expensive for the comparison of the number of people, I suspect, who are actually reading the newspaper. And for organisations who want a road closure for, you know, the Glastonbury Fun Run or the Wells, whatever it is, you know, food festival. This sort of stuff is completely out of scale when it costs the highways team, I think, £700 to place a square box in the back of the Froome Standard or the Wells Journal or whatever else it is. I'm rather hoping that's something that could go, and I suspect it's something that's in vague connection with this committee, vaguely. I don't know who else would have it. Maybe it's a policy to place things. But it strikes me something that is probably within the constitution of the county council in some way, and that might be an opportunity to save the council a bit of money.
Yeah.
That probably quite a lot.
Yes, almost certainly.
So I'd like.
I've
never finished. Just interrupt.
it has to be on the public notice. We have to tell.
Yeah,
the
but I'm just saying
they must know about it through one way or another.
Good point. I'm just saying. You know, good point. On the flipping parish, send the parishes. Yeah. And, you know, if you've got all the parishes, send them a notice if it applies to their parish. And
that should be sufficient.
Print it out and stick it on 3 notice boards, you know?
Yeah.
And all this money going to... I mean, it's a total waste. Is there an answer?
I suspect this is... this certainly isn't a contracting issue. This will be a digging up the highways and disrupting the flow of traffic issue. So it'll be under something about the Highways Act.
Yeah.
Where we are obliged, when we're going to carry out works, to publish a notice before we do it, so people can find an alternative route to work or whatever it is. And I don't know off the top of my head what the deadlines for doing that are. I agree that in principle it sounds crazy, doesn't it, to publish a notice which is so bland in its, in the detail it provides that it doesn't tell you anything 2 years ahead of time.
So this is not a constitution and standards matter?
I think this is a compliance with statute issue.
So where do I raise this again and give somebody else grief instead of you?
I don't know off the top of my head.
This is in Alan Jones's area.
Yeah.
It's a specific, so that would be our
service
policy.
Delivery. In terms of if you wanted a committee to raise it out, it would be scrutiny committees for policies in place.
Yeah.
Although personally, and it's just a personal recommendation, is just to raise the matter directly with the ECI operations director,
okay.
Alan Jones.
Yeah, okay, I'll do that.
Just to see in terms of response.
Yeah.
I'm sure he'd welcome discussion over other alternative opportunities for dealing with this.
Martin.
I was going to say I entirely agree. It seems that that particular regulation of publishing things in a newspaper is archaic, probably goes back to the previous century to the last.
18th.
And maybe it's not updated, not gone with the times.
So play devil's advocate.
Okay.
I would imagine that, I mean, we do publish these things on the website.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'd imagine that we have to do something so that every member of public is aware. Or is capable of becoming aware of it, not just those who have access to
yes.
The argument is, do they get that particular newspaper? We're getting into legalities.
Yeah, it's on the British Notice Board.
But I agree with Tess. If we don't have to do it, I don't think we should. I think we would be in the front line if people want to moan about the roads being closed. We are, and I don't get an awful lot of that, to be absolutely honest.
Okay. Oh, sure. Hugh? sorry. Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Hugh, your point, please.
Chair, the point I would like to make is I already tell each parish I go what's happening in their locality and update them, even by ringing the clerk if it's a change.
Mm.
Funny enough, I've front page of the Free Press this very day on a road closure of 2 weeks. Highlighting the problems which have all been passed on to me, so you've got to go to your division.
That should
you can't
be
leave it to humans as to whether they want to do
you've
that
you've already
or not.
Said that.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying because the parish chair would have, I suspect, it would come up in under your parish council meeting as correspondence to the parish from the county council, at the very minimum, if the parish chair or the clerk or somebody chose to go and put it on notice boards because that's what they should be doing, or whether councillors should be raising this stuff with their parish councils. But if they choose not to, or they have a day off, or they're, just thinking about something else,
okay.
I can see why the process is there, is to remove as much human error or whatever as possible.
Well,
we can just reinvent the process. It just needs a different process.
One of our problems is that very often we get the information after it's happened.
Good points made.
Get it in the net.
There are good points being made here. I think that is enough for this at the moment. But I think it's the direction that Tom has pointed us in is probably the best route. Any other business while we're here, Tom?
Let me just check. I've done more. Where's this thing? That's done. And that's
fine.
Yeah.
Anybody else? No?
No, thank you.
Well, thank you all for coming. I call this meeting to a close. Thank you.
Thank you.
May 24th. 24th of May.
You said the 44th.
Well, you're Jack as well, huh?
Yes.
Right. Thank you, Scott.
You're welcome.
So that's right. So cooperative members get hard copies.
Yes, they don't have they don't have devices.
Oh yes.
I thought
you said that. Yes, they've got
these. The kit.
How
much you know about these?
No,
it's like
not
the many parties. Well, again, under the forward work programme, you'll know that the constitution is the constitution you may feel could benefit from further clarity regarding substitution arrangements.
The thing is, we're such a small,
Yeah, well,
this,
you need to.
We're going to be. We could be in this adjoining. We're going to be court. Because there's only needs two or three of us to.